Ladies and gentlemen, this is Michael Collins Piper coming to you from Washington, D.C. here on the Republic Broadcasting Network. It's Monday afternoon, and I hope you all had a good weekend. I'm a little bit under the weather today, so I'm pleased to say that the person who's been the guest on the previous show with John Stadtmiller is also going to be staying over and joining me on my brief hour here on RBN. And, of course, that's Christopher Boleyn. Christopher, might as well bring Christopher right on over right now. Christopher, how are you doing? Well,
can you hear me, Mike?
I can hear you now, Christopher. I thought
Good evening.
I thought we were going to lose you.
Do we have Sam with us tonight?
Sam is supposed to be here. Sam, are you there?
You copy, Sam?
I believe so.
Yeah, I'm here. Your director came on the phone just now and asked me if I was here.
Okay.
Praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord. Amen, brother. Go ahead.
Okay, well. Ladies and gentlemen, if you haven't figured it out, maybe you were listening last Friday when Christopher Boleyn and I spent an hour here discussing the story of this man who's joined us now as the guest. And Christopher, I guess, is acting kind of, he's kind of the guest or the co-host, and I'm glad he's here, as I say, because I'm not feeling so well tonight. But this is Sam Danner, who is a witness. He's a Maryland man. He's a witness to the events that took place at the Pentagon on September 11th, 2001. You know, on the one hand, I'm inclined to call Sam a whistleblower, but know what he is. He's just a an American who saw something, and he's telling the truth about what he saw, and what he is going to tell us, and what he's already told Christopher, and which Christopher outlined us last Friday here in this program, what he saw and what he witnessed, and I might add what he held in his own hands right there at the Pentagon on September 11th, 2001, suggests to us very strongly that, well, let's be blunt about it, that our government lied to us about what happened at the Pentagon. Now, We're gonna let everybody else talk here in a minute, but I just want to lay the groundwork, fellas, for those who are first-time listeners or for those who are not familiar with the parameters of what we're talking about. But I hear the music coming up, not as loud as I'd like to hear it coming up, but I hear it coming up. That means we have a break, and then we will return and pursue this. Ladies and gentlemen, Michael Collins Piper here. Coming to you from Washington on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Please stay tuned. Very important show we have here today.
The Idaho Observer is one of the last independent American presses and isn't afraid to print the truth. The Idaho Observer is a monthly 24-page hard copy newspaper in its fifth year of addressing important issues affecting all freedom-loving Americans. If you are concerned about the burgeoning national debt and the Orwellian police state growing up around you, then subscribe to the Idaho Observer. Only $25 for 12 monthly issues. Idaho Observer readers receive vital insight into events as they unfold. Our articles editorially emphasize activism and serve as a networking tool for like-minded individuals determined to make a difference. The Idaho Observer, printing what you need to be fully informed on issues that matter to real Americans. Go to idaho-observer.com or call 208-255-2307. That's 208-255-2307.
Gasoline prices have reached record highs, and with no relief in sight, what can you as an individual do to lessen the impact on your wallet? With a guaranteed minimum of 10% and up to 30% increase in your fuel mileage, you can deny the fat cat oil executives at least some of your hard-earned money. Introducing the Fuel Mule, a very simple but revolutionary product that fits around the fuel line in your car, truck, or furnace. Utilizing scientifically engineered industrial nickel-cobalt magnets, the Fuel Mule device aligns the electrons of the atom atom and the molecules, allowing the fuel to burn more efficiently, resulting in increased horsepower, cleaner emissions, and fuel savings. The Fuel Mule normally sells for $149.95, but we're offering a temporary promotional price of only $89.95, plus shipping and handling. Quick and easy to install, order your Fuel Mule today by calling 1-800-724-2719. That's 1-800-724-2719. Do it now and start saving today.
KU Band Satellite is here. RBN is now offering a brand new way to hear your favorite programs. Listening to RBN via satellite is easy on the ears. Clean digital audio combined with consistently reliable reception anywhere in North America. KU utilizes a 30-inch dish and receiver similar to the equipment the subscription satellite TV services use. In fact, this satellite receiver also picks up a lot of television and music channel programming, even other talk radio networks. All of this with absolutely no monthly subscription fees, ever. Take advantage of our introductory offer and order your KU Dish receiver today for only $149 plus shipping and handling, and begin enjoying our highest quality audio available 365 days a year. Visit our website, www.rbnlive.com, for more information, or call 1-800-724-2719. That's 1-800-724-2719. Clean, consistent, and affordable.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. This is Michael Collins Piper coming to you from Washington on Republic Broadcasting Network. I have with me my colleague from American Free Press, Christopher Boleyn, who is, as I always say, the best journalist in America. And on Friday, he was here telling us the story of someone whom I had never even spoken to until just over this past weekend, and that's Sam Danner. Well, now Sam is joining us here himself tonight. He was a witness of what happened at the Pentagon. The story that he tells and the things that he experienced are a complete contradiction to what we have been told by our federal government about what happened at the Pentagon. Raises very serious questions as to the whole 911 story. And we will open up the phones later if you have any questions. And we'll probably carry this on over in tomorrow night's program as well. So if you're not quite prepared to call in tonight, if Sam is available tomorrow night and Christopher as well, we will carry this program through because it's a very important story. So, Sam, with all of that having been said, I want to welcome you aboard here.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad to be on board.
All right. And Christopher, of course, you're already here. I guess basically, Sam, what we need to do is just start out and let you tell what happened. What you experienced, how you happened to be where you were in the Washington, D.C. area on September 11th, and what you saw.
Well, why was I in Washington, D.C. when I don't live in Washington, D.C.? Like Michael said, I'm a Marylander, and I used to work for Amtrak, the National Passenger Rail Association, or corporation, which is Amtrak, and of course, they run the Northeast Corridor of trains. I used to work on these locomotives as an electrician, and I went down there to visit some of my friends. Now, 9/11, as we know it, as far as planes crashing into buildings and such, that hadn't happened yet. I was down there visiting with some friends in the engine house in the coach yard in Washington, D.C. Now, this is down about a mile behind the Union Station, right across the street from the Washington, from our capital of the United States in Washington, D.C. So, while this was going on, someone made an announcement on the train I happened to be sitting on that the nation was under attack. And these planes had, or one plane at that time, had crashed in one of the towers. I don't know which one at the time, because I've taken more time to study the Pentagon issue than I have the towers issue. So I said, well, where's the TV at? I'm going to see this. And we went up to the lounge where the employees, during break and lunch hour, they can work out, and they have, this kind of facilities there. And sure enough, on television, you could see what was going on, and it was pretty scary and frightful thing. And you know, to me, it looked as if you know, it was just as such. So then the nation was, I thought it was a cruise missile. Everybody was speculating. Someone said it was a passenger, a hijacked airplane. Someone said no, it wasn't. What didn't have any windows in it. All this conflicting data, and this is coming from the regular news media, CBS, NBC, CNN, Fox, and all those guys. They were reporting the same old thing. So the first thing I thought was, oh, this is someone, one terrorist attack, or what may it be? And I remember getting in my car saying, look, I'm getting out of here. This is the capital. Maybe they're going to come down here and hit this place. Little did I know what was going to happen, you know, a half an hour to 45 minutes from when I said that. So I got out of my car and turned the radio. Of course, all the radios were on this New York City thing. And I went out of Washington, D.C., and I'm not real familiar. I'm familiar with most of the roads around Washington, the George Washington Parkway and such, you people down in D.C. area. I mean, you know, I can go through the city and all that, but I wanted to get out of Dodge quick because I didn't know if something nuclear was going to take place or what. During this course of time, I think only one tower had been hit. Then I heard about a hijacking of a plane that was en route to Ohio. I wasn't told it was going to Pennsylvania. It was, or not Ohio. It was somewhere. No, it was going towards Ohio. And anyway, I went ahead and went through town and with the Washington D.C. and I got on what I thought was the appropriate bridge to get me across the Potomac River to get on the George Washington Parkway north. Well, I got on Interstate 395. It goes towards a large conglomerate of roads called the Mixing Bowl. Chris is on the line with us here. He can tell you about what the Mixing Bowl is. But it's a large interchange that I'm not very familiar with, and I started to get a little panicky. And I got up towards the Pentagon and thought nothing unusual, and then
I should point out for the listeners, there are a lot of roads that intersect around the Pentagon. You
yes,
can see
is.
The Pentagon from virtually every side,
that's
almost
correct.
from one road or another.
Yeah, it's hard. You can't just give somebody say, look, make a left here, get on two blocks, make a right, and go straight, and there you are. It's not that easy.
No, it can be very, very confusing. I've gotten lost out there myself within. And you can see the Pentagon from different roads that intersect and circle one another. And yes, that's exactly right.
Well, so anyway, in this, I didn't get in a panic or anything. I just thought, well, you know, we'll just go down here and get off an exit and turn around. Well, the next exit was right past the Pentagon, this big pillar leaf. So I thought, well, oh, this is just a thing. I'll take it and get off and come back on. But all of a sudden, the traffic started to slow down, and I looked to my left, which I can identify these areas now, which would be kind of like across from the helicopter pad. I was that parallel to the Pentagon, and I looked in that direction, and I saw what appeared to be something dark from that distance. It looked like a dark, fast-moving thing. We won't call it a jet. We won't even call it an airplane. It was just dark and moving fast and very silent. And so I didn't want to rear in the guy in front of me or have the guy behind me rear in this because some other people had caught their eyes. So I pulled off the car to the right of the shoulder as far as I could get it over to it. And I stood there, and I got out of the car to get a better look at this thing. Well, this thing was moving. So the first thing I thought of, UFO or something like that, you know, something weird. And then it never dawned on me about terrorist attack or anything of the such. So then this thing then I did recognize as an aircraft. It had wings on it, so I knew it was using, you know, airfoils, you know, it was picking up, using the air to fly, so it was an aircraft, and presumably from this world, and it was coming, like, in my direction towards me. Then I noticed the front of it reminded me of a Boeing 747. You would think to yourself, why in the world would he say that? Well, that's because this particular craft, as I found out later, has a great big, I guess it's called a radar dome or something where the guidance system would be at. I'm not quite sure. Some of the other gentlemen here and I can explain this more than what I would know. But I assumed some navigation equipment was in this thing. And then I realized then I was looking at something that was probably man-made and probably from over there not too far away at Langley, if you get my drift about what that means. So anyway, as this thing approached, I got a real good look at the front end. And so I listened. I thought, well, what's it flying off of? I don't hear any engine. I don't hear any propeller. Then I look, and I see an engine. I do see an engine, and then the engine's mounted like the 727 used to be. Well, they still fly those in third world countries and probably here, too. But the third engine, or maybe that was engine number two on the 727, was back in the tail. And it went down into the fuselage and out the back, and that was what propelled this plane, an engine like that. I didn't see three engines. I didn't see two engines on the wings. I saw one in the tail only.
Sam, let me ask you a question now.
Yes,
how
sir.
Far would you say you were from the Pentagon itself when you stopped your car? How far were you from the Pentagon?
Well, I walked the whole thing, so I'd say it's between a quarter and a half a mile. Maybe, let's make it a half a mile. If you take a satellite picture and look down on it, you can see it looks very close. But then, of course, when you're down there in reality, when you're down on the road looking, it's a little bit of a distance. So I'm not going to cheat. I'm going to say it's probably closer to a half a mile walk.
Okay, and I want to mention something for those who are not familiar with the Pentagon. I'm obviously here in the Washington area. That location where the Pentagon is, as I said, is surrounded by a lot of highways, and it's a very wide open area where you can see the Pentagon very clearly.
Yes, it's very wide open.
Yeah, from virtually all angles, and then there is the hill sloping down toward the Pentagon from that part of Virginia where it's located. And the Pentagon's right down there close to the river, so... So yes, it's quite conceivable for someone to be standing a half a mile away and seeing the entire Pentagon, and seeing a vehicle, an airborne vehicle of this type approaching it. So that helps my perspective as to kind of seeing exactly where you were in the context of this.
Well, I didn't tell Chris or you this. I mean, I was thinking about this more and more, and to get my details right about it, and I thought about, well, how far were you from it? And so I went to Terra Firma Server or something like that. It's called, it's one of those .com. It's for anybody that wants to see their house from a satellite, and it's free service. And I picked the whole thing out myself just to get an idea. And then I wanted to look all the roads up just to see where they all went, because I wanted to find these gas stations and stuff where federal agents, I understand, or somebody with high authority had confiscated these tapes. But we'll get back to the plane now. And this thing is headed towards me, and this is the longest look I got at it, probably a 2-second look. And then it made a sharp bank and a dive at the same time. I thought this thing defies gravity. I never saw anything fly like that. And it's a sharp bank and a...
All right, Sam, we have a break coming up here.
Right,
if you hold that thought, ladies and gentlemen, this is Michael Collins Piper, very important guest here with us tonight, Sam Danner, witness to the events at the Pentagon. You're listening to RBNLive.com and on shortwave. Stay tuned, folks, to 12.180 and RBNLive.com.
Attention, this is an RBN Self-Reliance update. RBN has just learned of a new bioactive superfood for garden plants, flowers, and herbs. It's called ProtoGrow, and it is so effective at producing rapid and natural plant growth that it seems to force plants to grow like crazy under almost any soil in light conditions. Now, here's the best part for our listeners who garden for self-reliance. ProtoGrow's unique blend of C nutrients maximizes mineral uptake, dramatically increases bloom set, and gives any plant a tremendous burst of new growth. In fact, some plants may double in size the very first month. ProtoGrow is also guaranteed to produce more succulent, mouth-watering fruits and vegetables than you can carry back to the house. And if you want to double or triple the potency of herbs or wheatgrass, you can. If you want to grow nutritionalized superfoods with non-hybrids, it's now easy. RBN listeners who want to stay prepared should call right now to order ProtoGrow. Ask about their self-reliant super pack. Call 877-327-0365. 877-327-0365. Or visit the ProtoGrow website at www.protogrow.com.
Axiom, The Second American Civil War, a new novel by T. Edward Allen. Through corruption, greed, and incompetence, the neocons have brought the world to the brink of World War III. John Carter and his family are caught in the middle of a terrifying plunge into chaos. When the world economy collapses, America is brought down with it. The focal point is the ideological conflict between progressives and conservatives. And when civil war breaks out, Americans find that every axiom they took for granted has been overturned. Dangerously political and thought-provoking, T. Edward Allen takes readers on a wild ride and a glimpse into America's future with madmen at the helm.
Buy Axiom at www.axiom-thenovel.com. That's axiom-thenovel.com, or find it at amazon.com. Get in on the buzz. Purchase your copy. Axiom, The Second American Civil War by T. Edward Allen.
Would you like to have an income regardless of the economic situation, which few trade people have considered? The art of knife sharpening is a skill that will never disappear and will always be in demand. Whether you have a place of business and just want to add to your income, or would like to travel servicing restaurants, barbershops, or a variety of businesses in need of sharpening tools, you're always guaranteed an income with repetitive business. Learn how to become a successful grindsman. It's easy to learn with our portable Grambo sharpening system. Travel anywhere you desire. Purchase the training manual for only $30, and it'll be applied toward your purchase of the Grambo sharpening system. America has become a service-oriented rather than a manufacturing or even high-tech economy. Take advantage of the situation and become a professional grindsman. It's easy to learn. Start on a shoestring with the overwhelming amount of business out there. Now is the best time to start. Call today for more information. You can enjoy the good life. Call now, 512-297-3152. That's 512-297-3152.
Welcome back to the Republic Broadcasting Network. This is Michael Collins Piper. We've got my colleague from American Free Press, Christopher Boleyn. And we've got a very special guest, Sam Danner from Maryland, who's a witness to what happened at the Pentagon on September 11th, 2001. And suffice it to say, the bottom line is, as you'll hear from what Sam witnessed, what he witnessed is not what our government claims happened on 9/11. Now, Sam was telling us how he was right at the Pentagon, maybe about a half a mile away from the Pentagon, which, as anyone who knows the area knows, that the Pentagon is very, very visible. In fact, the entire area is very visible there, the way it's laid out. So you could be standing a half a mile away from the Pentagon and see in many directions for quite a distance. And this is what, and as we went to the break, and I might mention to Sam, we're going to have another break coming up in about 5 minutes. And then after that break, we'll have about 20 minutes, 20 to 25 minutes uninterrupted. So just proceed, Sam, and tell us what you saw. You saw an airborne vehicle coming towards the Pentagon, and you saw it very, very clearly, and you described it to us, and the description you gave to us of what you saw is a complete contradiction of the Boeing 757 that the government has contended hit the Pentagon. Well, tell us what you saw there as you watched, with a little bit of surprise, I might add.
Well, this plane that I was observing, we'll call it the 747 Embraer, it was coming straight at me. I mean, that's the appearance it gave, the illusion, because it was coming like up. It wasn't like it was following a highway, because it went in off to my right-hand side, and then it went, three cars ahead of me or so. One guy, I saw him duck. It went right, I mean, remember, I'm standing up. I'm outside the car. I'm not in the car. I'm outside seeing this. And I heard a whine of a jet engine, but I did not hear any roar. As that thing took a wide 180-degree or maybe a little bit steeper bank to the right, went past this gentleman's car, past the highway, way ahead of me, thank Jesus, and went down and then made this sharp dive and straightened out. Like it knew what it, like it was falling contour, like wires were buried in the ground and it was like, some, you know, like these, dog leash things you put out in the yard and bury it and the dog won't cross the wire. I mean, I don't know who was flying this thing or how it could have been flown. It was big enough to carry a man, I guess, or maybe a couple guys laying on their stomachs or something, but it was not a commercial aircraft as I know it.
Can you estimate how long it was, how wide the wingspan was? Can you give us any estimates like that?
Oh, gosh. I'd have to... You're talking about really guessing here.
We'll qualify that by saying you're guessing, so go ahead. Yeah,
I'm going to say 30 to 35-foot wingspan and probably, maybe 18 to 30, the body can't be wider than the wing. It was, maybe 25 feet long. Of course, the engine, I looked at the smashed-up engine, and I was trying to judge how big that was.
Okay, well, we'll get to that later once we get you down to the Pentagon. But basically...
I can't really give you an
answer. No, and I understand, and you were also, as you say, about a half a mile away, but the bottom line is it was very clear to you...
Wait a minute, I was a half a mile from the Pentagon.
Right.
This thing was a couple hundred feet in front of me.
Right, okay, but then, of course, it eventually hit the Pentagon.
Oh, yeah, the duration...
I'm sorry?
It went ahead and crashed. It went plowed right into the Pentagon.
Right, okay.
Straight into it.
But, Sam, didn't you say that it was about the size of a Gulfstream?
Well, I mentioned that in an email. It was about the size. It reminded me of a Gulfstream 300 first.
Mm-hmm.
So Gulfstream has smaller models than the 300. I'd
mm-hmm.
say it's probably the smallest Gulfstream model that's out there, and I think there's a 150 or a 100.
It's mm-hmm.
new. And if you look at I've got all of the Gulfstream brochures at the house. So
mm-hmm.
I'd say of the smaller of the business executive planes from Gulfstream Corporation, I would say that it was probably a Gulfstream 150. I'll go with that. The 300 is kind of like the average size Gulfstream.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is a relatively large airplane. It was bigger than this thing that I'm talking about.
Okay.
But nonetheless, it's not any what you saw fly.
It was not
from
a Boeing 757 by any means.
Right, exactly.
No way.
As it approached you, what did you notice about the tail?
Oh well, the tail was really not. You know, back when I was a kid in the '60s, Beechcraft, and they could have put this out earlier. And I wasn't into flying until I was 16. But when I was a young child, I remember playing with a toy airplane called a Beechcraft Bonanza. And had this V-tail wing. Well, they're real popular today if you can find them. I subscribe to Flying Magazine, and, you know, they'll have people looking for these Bonanzas everywhere because they're like collector's items. And so this tail was a V-vortex-type tail. On this jet that I saw that hit the Pentagon, it was a V-tail. I distinctly remember that of everything. That and the engine. And that goofy-looking front. Those things were distinctive. The wings, color, landing gear. Here comes the music again.
All right, there we go. Perfect, perfect segue into our break. Ladies and gentlemen, you've heard some very important information here tonight, and you're going to hear a lot more. Please stay tuned. This is Michael Collins Piper with 911 witness Sam Danner and my colleague Christopher Belin. We're here on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Please stay tuned.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
There is one and only one national populist news weekly, staffed by an unsurpassed team of veteran investigative journalists who have dared to rip the veil of deception from the cover-up stories promoted by the big money-controlled media monopoly.
American Free Press.
AFP's no-holds-barred journalists fearlessly seek the truth, no matter how controversial the issue. AFP publishes exciting, in-depth, uncensored news and information good patriotic Americans need to know to combat the coming police state being clamped in our republic. The American Free Press is your voice. Subscribe today and catch up on the real news. Mention RBN when you call and receive a one-year subscription, plus a copy of Michael Collins Piper's latest bestseller, The High Priests of War. All that for just $49. Call AFP toll-free, 888-699-NEWS, or visit AmericanFreePress.net.
Hi, this is John Statler, and I want to tell you about a new shortwave receiver that we're really excited about. It's the Kato KA1103, and let me tell you, this radio has features and performance of receivers costing 2 to 3 times the price. Features include dual conversion phase lock loop tuner for continuous coverage of the entire shortwave band, AM, FM, and medium bands, 268 memory presets, single sideband reception with fine tuning control, signal strength, meter, battery, power indicator, DX local select, tone select, auto backlight screen, extra long telescopic antenna, line out and external line in jacks, and many other features too long to list. And when you purchase a Kato KA1103, you just don't get a radio, you get an entire radio package, including an external antenna, stereo earbuds, and an AC adapter, rechargeable batteries, and a nice carry pouch. So if you've been considering buying a shortwave receiver or would like to upgrade from your present radio, the KA1103 at just $110 plus $9 shipping is an outstanding value. Call us at 800-724-2719. 800-724-2719.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means
they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
Americans who own guns, people like you and me, prevent over 1 million violent crimes every year. Get the facts on gun control. Visit armedandsecure.org. That's armedandsecure.org.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. This is Michael Collins Piper. I'm a little bit under the weather here this evening, but I've been perked up a little bit because of the fact that I have one of my most brilliant colleagues ever on board here with us tonight, and I'm not exaggerating. That's Christopher Boleyn. He's by far the best reporter working the real news beat in America today, and American Free Press is very privileged. They are very privileged to have him. And our guest, our special guest here tonight is Sam Danner, who's been telling us his firsthand account. I think you can tell it's a very honest, straightforward, unembellished firsthand account of what he witnessed on September 11th at the Pentagon. And he witnessed a plane that was clearly not a Boeing 757. He witnessed an airborne vehicle, I should say, that was clearly not a 757. Striking the Pentagon. He saw it. It flew towards him, over him, and took a steep bank and turned right into the Pentagon. Now, Sam, one thing we didn't point out here, although I think Christopher mentioned it on the program when he was here on Friday, you happen to be a pilot of some experience, so you know a little bit about what you're talking about as far as planes are concerned.
Well, that's small aircraft, like I was talking to your producer there earlier. She was aware of the same airplane I was talking about that had that Bonanza style tail. So I had at a young age of 16, you know, airplane lessons compared to today were cheap, and that's how I got involved in with wanting to earn a license to fly.
Okay, well, I think that's considerably important because there were a lot of people who have been quoted in the media and the mass media in America as saying they saw a plane come down, and they saw the plane hit the Pentagon. But a lot of those people aren't necessarily pilots. They're not people who have an abiding and long-term interest in aviation as you do. And you were able to pick out things on this airborne vehicle that were considerably different than you noticed it right away because of your experience as a pilot. You noticed things that I can tell you, if I saw an airborne vehicle coming towards the Pentagon, I would see something I might not immediately recognize. I wouldn't know the difference. I might not even be able to tell you whether it was a passenger jet or a military jet unless it was marked as such, and even then you don't know. So that is the importance of what you're telling us here. Number one, you do have some experience as a pilot. You've been around planes. You just mentioned in passing about having a lot of aviation magazines around your house. I mean, you obviously have an interest in it and are aware.
Well, I have a big interest in military jets. So every year at Andrews Air Force Base, on Armed Forces Day, I used to take my children when they were little. Then it got to be boring, then they grew up, moved out of the house. But I went year after year, and I'll still go down.
Tim, were you a licensed pilot at the time at 911?
Was I what, sir?
Were you licensed? Are you a licensed pilot? Were you as a licensed pilot?
No, I'm not
pilot?
Licensed now, currently. And where I have lymphoma, I mean, I'll never be able to fly again.
Uh-huh.
So that kind of, like, rules that out. No, not now. Now I'm currently not licensed.
No,
I let it go due to medical reasons.
Okay,
but I just wanted to drive that point home again that we're not talking about an amateur witness here. We're talking about somebody who's kind of inclined to notice things about planes that other people who aren't real familiar with.
It's very important, Sam. What did you notice about the windows or lack of windows on this plane?
Well, I did notice there was no lack of windows. So to me, I thought this thing's flying stealth. There's no pilots looking out windows. There were no windows, portholes, or any openings. But remember, this is fast. There could have been one on there for all I know. I'm going to be up front about this.
Right.
People think, well, this guy's really pouring on this detail. How could he see so much detail when it was moving at approximately 400 miles an hour? So I want to be up front and say there could have been things there. I could have missed things.
But it was coming at you at first, right? And then it went past you.
Yeah, and I got a good look at the front.
Right.
A really good look at the front end. And it had that guppy-type look. That's what it reminded me of. That global guppy kind of thing that used to carry it. It was a Globemaster. They built that years ago, too.
Didn't you say it looked like a humpback whale?
A humpback whale. That's what it reminded me of, the humpback whale. That front, it was the oddest looking front, so I assumed it was some sort of navigation stuff. By this time, I proceeded to be a terrestrial and from this planet, so I assumed the front end, this dome-looking thing, was your navigation and your radar and what may it be.
And when it went past you, Sam, how far away was it from when it went past you? How far away were you from it?
Oh, maybe 300 feet. The air just blew all over us, dust and everything. I mean,
and what kind of sound did you remember hearing as it went past you?
Then I heard this whining scream sound. The engine changed pitch all of a sudden to a higher pitch, pitch whine, but it didn't have that roar. It was just, I turned my head and ducked. I thought it was going to crash right there. And I thought, gosh, I'm going to get blown up, you know, turn into a fireball or something. But then, as soon as I turned my head and then I turned back again, that's when I caught that real quick, snapping move they made. Bank 180 down and up, and then right along, skimming along, like a frisbee, skimming along the lawn, which is
right.
A real wide area, as Michael mentioned earlier, a real wide, across their divide.
Yeah, there's a very wide approach to the Pentagon.
And it approached right into the, right straight ahead, right past the,
so it went over that big clover leaf and then across the lawn, and it was flying at the grass level.
At the grass level, I would say, yeah, at the grass level. And then it was kind of like flying at an angle. It was coming in at a right angle to the building.
Okay.
I mean, it wasn't flying like T-bone. It was like at a right angle. I don't know if I'm north, south, east, or west. After we had that discussion about highways and stuff. But, I mean, I'm facing west,
yeah,
as I remember, and this thing... Well, I'm facing south, but this thing came in from behind, and it's like it went in at an angle, then hit the Pentagon. And
so it approached from the south, southwest?
Yes, sir. It came from the north. I took a compass out and tried to orient myself after this is over with, because I carry all this stuff with me, and which way was north, south, east, and west? Because I'm, like I said, I get lost in these maze of roads they got down there. It's like L.A. or something.
Yeah.
So, anyway, it came from the north area, and then it came to the southwest and around to the west. And
so it made this huge 270-degree turn right there.
Yeah. I checked that out. I heard that somewhere about 270-degree turn. So I charted that on a chart to see if it made sense. It made mathematical sense. I mean,
right.
on a flight plan, an acrobat pilot could do it, or a Navy jet pilot could do it, but nothing. This thing was too small, unless somebody was good at the fly blind. I don't know. This was really unusual. And then when it hit, the impact was a very loud, thunderous impact and very brilliant white. It was a white phosphorus kind of flash.
Uh-huh.
It was not, and I'm telling you, this is what got me really upset.
Right.
People are going to ask me, I know it. Someone's going to call up and they're going to ask, how come you've been withholding this information for 4 years? That's going to come up. I know it. And I'm going to answer it now, and I'll answer it again. But when I saw, what do you want to call it, the government commercial, we're going to release 5 frames of the Pentagon Flight 77 crash. Okay, they show us those frames. When I saw that, that's what lit the spark for me. I thought, horse hockey, that's not what happened. Because those are computer, look to me, I'm not a computer freak, but they look like computer-generated images. I saw a fireball, and I saw smoke, and I saw fire, but it was a brilliant white phosphorus flash, and I smelt what they now call cordite, which I didn't know what the heck that was at all. But it was like gunpowder odor, like you just went to the fireworks. And those, ladies and gentlemen, are the reasons that I came forth to speak now, because all those years, I questioned myself in my mind. I thought I was mentally disturbed or something was wrong with me.
Mm-hmm.
Here I'd been on a crash site, and with the federal government standing right next to me, nobody's putting orange flags down like we always do at these things for all the parts. They're told to pick all the parts up.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's picking parts up. Nobody's.
And let me stop right here. This is very, very important. You had experience also as an emergency medical technician.
Yes, sir.
And after you saw this happening, your immediate response was to be an EMT, and you went to the scene to help out, to help rescue people, to just be there and
do
provide
whatever
any
I could
assistance
do to be
you
assistance.
Could. Hello?
To do whatever I could do to
right.
be of assistance. That's
and what did you find, Sam? What did you find there?
I didn't find anything but a bunch of scrap metal. The biggest piece was that piece that I was right behind that guy. I could have been in that shot, but I didn't know whose camera it was. If it was identifiable as some network thing, I might have walked in front of it. But I think it was the federal government taping themselves. That sounds stupid, doesn't it? But that's what I thought. That was the impression I had. That was the picture of the man. It's in Eric's book, but you've all seen a picture of the man carrying a piece of metal. It looks like he's crazy and get his clothes soiled or get his shirt dirty.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these white-collar workers were all out there. Some of them, the majority, looked like they were really in shock and awe, and they didn't. They were just do what they were told. It seemed like it was like a military operation. It wasn't
mm-hmm.
like a civilian thing. And then when the fire department got there, I questioned, why were they shooting foam and water on kerosene? And because I didn't smell any kerosene, I didn't smell anything that resembled a jet plane crash.
Sam, when did you start picking up the pieces of the debris? When did you actually start picking up pieces of debris?
Oh, I started as soon as I got, well, first I wanted to see where the survivors.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I wasn't concerned about the debris issue. I went right up to the hole, and then they stopped me from going so far. They saw that I had a uniform on of an appropriate medical unit that I worked for. Had worked for, and I carried that in my car, and so they knew I was some sort of I was a
rescue personnel.
Yeah, rescue personnel. I was reputable or whatever, and so I went up and is there where? What do you want me to do? What do you want me to, just stand there, sir? Stand there, sir. We thank you for your assistance. They were very kind. And when I say they were men in coats and ties, men in ties and white shirts. It just didn't seem like anything I ever saw in my life. A plane crash, I've been there, you got pieces, you got luggage, you got stuff everywhere. I mean, it's a literal dump. And if this thing was going, if it was a 757 going that far, I'll never buy the story that it went through four of those 2 or 4 foot walls, those structured things, like four miniature buildings, as I remember looking at it, and with these steel girders, the plane had been shredded to pieces, but there was no pieces. The only thing I could find that really interested me, but besides that piece of metal that one guy was carrying, was in polymers and resins.
Mm-hmm.
What are they, you say, polymers and resins? They were parts of the plane that probably the space shuttle could have been made of. They were they fashion these now in the new air in the new Airbus. The Airbus 318s have it. 319 model has it. The stabilizer is made of this polymer, and it's like a carbon resin, and it looks like something like fiberglass. When it's broken, you can see it, and I could feel the smooth contour over it. Well, I was told to hand all that stuff over. I wasn't allowed to. I could touch it. Because I was picking it up, they weren't going to yell at me then.
Mm-hmm.
But they said, "Give it to us. Everything, every little scrap." We had to turn. I saw people doing this. You know, these other federal employees, plus other people like me off the highway, doing the same thing. But I was more interested in helping who the survivors. Of course, I knew nobody in my mind's eye. I knew nobody survived this crash. But my sole idea was survivors, people, life. That's what I was trained for, not to pick up trash. So I went in, you know, tried it once again. Are there any survivors, sir? Pentagon survivors? Anybody in there killed? You know,
mm-hmm.
We have it under control. They called me son. We have it under control, son. And I was 49, 48 then. I'm 53 now. So I thought, that's odd he called me that. Because he was a younger man than I was. And so then I went, then over to my left of the... over to my left, I'm facing the front of where the building hadn't collapsed yet. I'm going to get to that part because that's I'm looking at my watch here.
Well, listen, I'll tell you what. At this juncture, we do have two callers. I think this is a perfect time to go
okay,
into the calls.
Okay, put them on.
Yeah, and then tomorrow night we're going to wrap it up. We'll go through it again real quickly and then detail the additional things that you've experienced since then. So let's go to Chris from Chicago. Chris, I hope you have a question here for...
Hi. Did they assume any kind of a military defensive posture, given that the Pentagon was obviously under attack? Were they worried that there would be a secondary land attack? Were they trying to identify people and what they were doing there?
Now, sir, who's your question directed to?
I believe to you, Sam.
Okay.
Whether or not they appeared to be prepared for an additional attack or if they were treating it as a finished product, so to speak.
No, sir. It looked to me as if they... It was a plane that crashed into the Pentagon. I mean, just as simple as that. I didn't hear the word terror attack or anything to do with WTC. And as far as them looking like, did they look like they were preparing themselves for a possible military action, or was there military equipment there to retaliate in case something else would fly in, like you're talking about Stinger missiles and this sort of thing, like to protect the Capitol or the White House? I understand they have missile capability down there, but I did not see any army people or anybody of that nature whatsoever. All I saw was white coats, ties, badges, and occasional shoulder holster gun.
Okay, Chris, in Chicago, did you have a follow-up question there?
Yeah, why weren't they worried that the debris might contain explosive devices or biological weapons or other things that might be harmful to those who were picking it up and might detonate them?
Well, Chris, you can tell me that, because I'm not being smart with you, sir, but I really don't know.
That's a good question, Chris. Yeah,
it is. That's an excellent question. I have cancer. I have lymphoma. And some of my peers have now told me that there was, maybe we shouldn't get into the subject now, I don't know, but depleted uranium involved in this. But we'll let that for tomorrow night. You want to
all right. Chris from Chicago, thanks for two very good questions.
Thank you, Chris.
Let's go to Russell in Wyoming.
Hi, Sam. I had a couple of questions. One, I was trying to orient myself. Were you on I-95 facing westbound?
No.
Or eastbound?
I was on I-95 going westbound. No, I was on what we were talking about this during the break, about getting confused about the roads. I thought I was on 395 south. 395 south goes past the Pentagon. But as I looked at it on the aerial satellite image that I have, I began to doubt was I on 395, because when I get into those 395 and George W. Parkway and 95 and all these different signs, I get into I'm a small town boy. I get into one of these Holy Ghost panics where
I'm not sure
which road I'm on.
But you said, Sam, you said that the Pentagon was on your left side.
It was
right?
On my left hand side.
There we go.
The Pentagon was on your left hand side.
Yes, sir. I was going south, and the Pentagon was on my left. So, you know, and then when they showed those gas stations and stuff later, I wanted to go back down and retrace all this stuff. And we, myself and Christopher, who's on the horn with us, we plan to do that, don't we, Chris?
Yes, sir.
We're going to retrace the whole thing and film this and
okay,
whatever.
Okay, fellas, we have a break coming up here. Russell in Wyoming, if you want to stay on. We have about 5 minutes left after the break. This is Michael Collins Piper coming to you from Washington here on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Very important program here tonight. I can say that without hesitation. Please stay tuned.
Attention, this is an RBN Self-Reliance update. RBN has just learned of a new bioactive superfood for garden plants, flowers, and herbs. It's called ProtoGrow, and it is so effective at producing rapid and natural plant growth that it seems to force plants to grow like crazy under almost any soil in light conditions. Now, here's the best part for our listeners who garden for self-reliance. ProtoGrow's unique blend of C nutrients maximizes mineral uptake, dramatically increases bloom set, and gives any plant a tremendous burst of new growth. In fact, some plants may double in size the very first month. ProtoGrow is also guaranteed to produce more succulent, mouth-watering fruits and vegetables than you can carry back to the house. And if you want to double or triple the potency of herbs or wheatgrass, you can. If you want to grow nutritionalized superfoods with non-hybrids, it's now easy. RBN listeners who want to stay prepared should call right now to order ProtoGrow. Ask about their self-reliant super pack. Call 877-327-0365. 877-327-0365. Or visit the ProtoGrow website at www.protogrow.com.
Americans who already realize our nation is in deep trouble need special edition hard copy literature to awaken the widest possible spectrum of people to the imminence of our nation's peril. The Artificially Sweetened Times informs people that the artificial sweetener aspartame is a hidden addiction killing people worldwide with a cluster of symptoms we now call Rumsfeld's disease. Find out who's responsible for unleashing this weapon of mass misery on the world and become part of the global movement to eliminate this neurotoxic drug from our food supply. The People's Income Tax Guide cites congressional records, Supreme Court decisions, and newspaper articles at the time to prove conclusively that wages were never intended to be taxed as income. A lot has happened in the world since 9/11. The report of the Citizens Commission on 9/11 disproves the government's explanation of September 11 through a careful analysis of the evidence. The Artificially Sweetened Times, the People's Income Tax Report, and the report of the Citizens Commission on 9/11 are priced for mass distribution. Sample copies are just $3. Call 208-255-2307 or go to idaho-observer.com.
Gasoline prices have reached record highs, and with no relief in sight, what can you as an individual do to lessen the impact on your wallet? With a guaranteed minimum of 10% and up to 30% increase in your fuel mileage, you can deny the fat cat oil executives at least some of your hard-earned money. Introducing the Fuel Mule, a very simple but revolutionary product that fits around the fuel line in your car, truck, or furnace. Utilizing scientifically engineered industrial nickel cobalt magnets, the Fuel Mule device aligns the electrons of the atom and the molecules, allowing the fuel to burn more efficiently, resulting in increased horsepower, cleaner emissions, and fuel savings. The Fuel Mule normally sells for $149.95, but we're offering a temporary promotional price of only $89.95, plus shipping and handling. Quick and easy to install, order your Fuel Mule today by calling 1-800-724-2719. That's 1-800-724-2719. Do it now and start saving today.
All right, folks. Welcome back. This is Michael Collins Piper, rushing into this last few minutes here on a very dramatic program that, I, as far as I'm concerned, proves that the official government version of what happened at the Pentagon is a lie. Now, we have Russell, a caller on from Wyoming, who was asking a question about where our guest Sam Danner was on what road he was on precisely, and I think we've settled it that Sam himself is not exactly sure what road he was on, but he and Christopher Belin and myself, if I'm around, are going to head on out there to the Pentagon and try to chart this all out and see precisely where. Those of you who don't know the area will, it's one thing to look at it on a map, but you have to be there to appreciate how easily one can get lost. I don't drive that much, but the last few times I have driven in the Washington, D.C. area, I have gotten on wrong roads in that very location.
So that
I can attest to. Now, Russell, did you have any further questions there?
Yeah, just one more super quick one. When he had mentioned seeing the small engine, I would be curious as to, A, how far out from the building that was, and, B, in, from the generator fire to the heliport, back and forth, how far it was, just to try to get a location on where he said he saw the engine.
Well, sir, I walked almost right up to the engine. I was told to stand back. So I was right. You mean the jet engine that was smashed up and crashed?
Yeah, the little three-foot engine.
Yeah, the I call it a three-foot engine because the turbine blades are all broken off. Obviously, most of them break off in these crashes. And if with those on, it would have been 4.5 feet maybe with the fan totally intact. I'm guessing maybe 4 feet, but with the blades all off, it was about 2.5 to 3 feet in diameter. And I got a really good look at that thing.
And Sam, was that outside the building or inside the building?
Oh no, that was outside, sir. That was outside the building.
And I guess the logical question, Russell, I want to thank you for your call. I'll wrap it up here on this subject.
Thank you, Russell.
I guess the logical question that arises then, this engine, this item from this airborne vehicle that struck the Pentagon, that's not something consistent with a Boeing 757, is it?
No, sir. Those engines are about 9 tons apiece, and I think, or 10 tons apiece. I'm sorry, I've written so much about this. 10 tons apiece because I've studied the aircraft. About approximately 9 feet in diameter, and they would put, and excuse me for saying this, but two hell of a bunch of punch holes in that building if they would have gone through there. If that had been that plane, those things would have been more like missiles and might have made it all the way through it. That kind of weight and inertia being 400 to 450 miles an hour. But once again, being from a pilot's view, there's no way a plane could make a bank like that and get down that low that quick. That
757 couldn't have done it, Sam. There's no way a 757 could have done that.
And obviously that wreckage that you personally saw, that you stood within a few feet of, that was not the wreckage from a 757, and dare I say, I don't think that even if, you know, the official story is a 757 hit the Pentagon, someone might say, well, maybe they were carrying cargo for another airplane. I don't think so.
Or talking, I agree.
Yeah, honesty, you exude a lot of honesty, I have to say that, and I don't think you've made up a single point here. I don't think you've embellished anything. I think you've told exactly what you saw. And what you saw is not what the government claims happened.
I've tried to. I have to answer to a higher power.
Sam, listen, thank you very much. I hope you will be able to join us again tomorrow night, and Christopher likewise. And
I'll be there.
We'll pursue this a lot further and take a lot more phone calls.
God bless you all.
Thank you, Sam.
Thank you for your bravery, Sam. Christopher, thanks to you for bringing this wonderful guest to us. Ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, Chris.
I hope you found this as interesting as I have, and I hope you'll tune in tomorrow night here on the Republic Broadcasting Network. This is Michael Collins Piper signing off for now, but we'll see you tomorrow at 6 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. I'm in Eastern Time Zone, folks, right here in Washington, D.C.
Everyone agrees our children are the future leaders of this great nation. How can we expect the founding values of our great republic to continue with future generations when these same values are being phased out of the government-run school system? There is a solution. The Little Red Schoolhouse Project, a community-based school system founded by Dr. Jake Wade to provide a biblical and constitutionally based education for our children. Help us prepare the next generation in our fight for freedom. Ask us how you can help by writing to Providence Christian Academy, 280 Tenney Creek Road, Dale, Texas, 78616, or by calling 512-398-4833. Once again, that is Providence Christian Academy, 280 Tenney Creek Road, Dale, Texas, 78616. Support your local Little Red Schoolhouse. Call 512-398-4833 and ask how you can help ensure no student is turned away.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.